Okay, then why don't we make a start? I'll just add my welcome to Pips. I'm Andy. So if you're visiting us today, you're particularly welcome. You're welcome if you're not a visitor. If you come here regularly, you're still very welcome. But if you're visiting today, then a particularly warm welcome to you. Great to have you with us. We've been looking at Joseph, but we'll be coming on to that in a few moments. I thought we'd start just with a little quiz question. There's a new film out, a new Churchill film out recently, just in the last couple of weeks. I don't know if any of you have seen it yet. You might be at an advantage with this question if you have. But there's a famous Churchill quote which goes something like this. I'm not Gary Oldman. I'm not Churchill, so I'm not going to be able to do the voice. But it goes like this. This is not the end. It is not even the beginning of the end. But it is, perhaps, the end of the beginning. Now, when did Churchill say that? 1940, you think? 44? No. No, it wasn't the 30s. 42, well done, second time. Good guess, second time. Do you know when? Do you know what happened in 1942? The point at which he said that? El Alamein, yeah, well done. I always thought it was the Battle of Britain, but it wasn't. It was later. It was just after the battle at El Alamein, which was when the British drove the Germans out of Egypt. Churchill later wrote that before that battle, Britain had never had a victory in the Second World War. But after it, Britain never had a defeat. It was a defining turning point. Now, many great stories or great events in history have their defining turning point. In films, it's often the point when the hero, who's been crushed relentlessly, finally comes through and the crowds all cheer. Well, today is that day in the story of Joseph. So for those who haven't been around for the last few weeks, we've been looking at Joseph. And it's a story of Joseph in the book of Genesis. And I'm just going to give you a quick context for where the story fits. If you go back a little bit earlier, Abraham is a man chosen by God. He's going to be the start of God's chosen people. Abraham miraculously has a son, Isaac. Isaac has a son, Jacob. And Jacob has 12 sons, one of whom is Joseph. So that's where Joseph fits. In each case, the promises of God are passed down. These are promises that the people will be God's people. He will be their God. He will give them a land of their own. They will be a huge nation. And they will be a blessing to the nations around. But as at where we join the story today, none of that has yet happened. Now, as for Joseph, Joseph is favored by his dad, but he's very unpopular with his brothers. And he's sold by them into slavery. He ends up in Egypt. His fortunes rise as God is with him, and his master, Potiphar, makes him second in command. But soon they plummet again, and he ends up in prison. Again, though his fortunes improve, God is with him, and the prison warder then makes him second in command. But he is still a prisoner. Every door is closed to him. The world is hidden from him. This is for your benefit, Simon. His windows are barred, the light is shut out. We really haven't had enough Andrew Lloyd Webber in this series, but that's just my view. So that's where we find Joseph at the start of chapter 41. In fact, perhaps a clue to it being the turning point in the story is this is the point just after the interval. So the curtain's closed as Joseph's in prison. We're rejoining as the lights are coming up for the second half. Can there be an end for this poor, poor Joseph? What's he going to do? Okay, that's it. No more now. Okay, we're going to read it. We're going to read it in a few moments. Hopefully, with a little bit of a drama. Then we're going to reflect on it through what I've called a journey. I've called it a journey from why to worship. Then we're going to sing, pray, and as you've seen, share communion together. And then right at the end, I'm going to come back for, if you like, a little postscript, just with a slightly different perspective, something to reflect on over your coffee or lunch later. But first, the passage. So turn it up in the Bibles. You haven't found them yet, just in the pouches behind you. It's Genesis chapter 41. It's on page 43. And because it's such a great dramatic story, I thought we'd act it out, or a radio act it out, if you like. So we've got four great radio actors who are going to come up and play their different parts. We have Sarah as narrator, soprano voice. We have Paul as Joseph, Malcolm as Pharaoh, with optional Elvis impression, and Satnam as cupbearer. I don't think you need the mics, Rudy. There you
go. When 2 full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing by the Nile when out of the river there came 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, 7 other cows, ugly and gaunt, came up out of the Nile and stood beside those on the riverbank. And the cows that were ugly and gaunt ate up the 7 sleek, fat cows. Then Pharaoh woke up. He fell asleep again and had a second dream. 7 ears of corn, healthy and good, were growing up on a single stalk. After them, 7 other ears of corn sprouted, thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin ears of corn swallowed up the 7 healthy, full ears. Then Pharaoh woke up. It had been a dream. In the morning, his mind was troubled, so he sent for all the magicians and wise men of Egypt. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but no one could interpret them for him. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh,
"Today I am reminded of my shortcomings. Pharaoh was once angry with his servants, and he imprisoned me and the chief baker in the house of the captain of the guard. Each of us had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. Now, a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. We told him our dreams, and he interpreted them for us, giving each man the interpretation of his dream. And things turned out exactly as he interpreted them to us. I was restored to my position, and the other man was impaled."
So Pharaoh sent for this Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph,
"I have a dream, and no one can interpret it. But I've heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it."
"I cannot do it,"
Joseph replied to Pharaoh.
"But God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires."
Then Pharaoh said to Joseph,
"In my dream, I was standing on the bank of the Nile when out of the river there came up 7 cows, fat and sleek, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, 7 other cows came up, scrawny and very ugly, and lean. I had never seen such ugly cows in all the land of Egypt. The lean, ugly cows ate up the 7 fat cows that came up first, but even after they ate them, no one could tell what they'd done so. They looked just as ugly as before. Then I woke up. In my dream, I saw 7 ears of corn, full and good, growing on a single stalk. After them, 7 other ears sprouted, withered and thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin ears of corn swallowed up the 7 good ears. I told this to the magician, but none of them can explain it to me."
Then Joseph said to Pharaoh,
"The dreams of Pharaoh are wrong and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The 7 good cows are 7 years. And the 7 good ears of corn are 7 years. It is one and the same thing. The 7 lean, ugly cows that came up after are 7 years. And so are the 7 worthless ears of corn, scorched by the east wind. They are 7 years of famine. It is just as I said to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. 7 years of great abundance are coming throughout the land of Egypt. But 7 years of famine will follow them. Then all the abundance in Egypt will be forgotten, and the famine will ravage the land. The abundance in the land will not be remembered, because the famine that follows it will be so severe. The reason the dream is given to Pharaoh in 2 forms is that the matter has been firmly decided by God, and God will do it soon. Now, let Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man, and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth of the harvest of Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. They should collect all the food of these 2 years that are coming, and store the grain under the authority of Pharaoh, to be kept in the cities for food. This food should be held in reserve for the country, to be used during the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt, so that the country
The plan seemed a good one to Pharaoh and to all his officials. So Pharaoh asked them,
"Can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God?"
Then Pharaoh said to Joseph,
Since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you.
So Pharaoh said to Joseph,
I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt.
Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in a chariot as his second in command, and people shouted before him, "Make way!" Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph,
I am Pharaoh, but without your word, no one will lift hand or foot in all Egypt.
Pharaoh gave Joseph the name Zaphenathpaneah and gave him Asenath, daughter of Potiphar, priest of On, to be his wife. And Joseph went throughout the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and Joseph went out from Pharaoh's presence and travelled throughout Egypt. During the 7 years of abundance, the land produced plentifully. Joseph collected all the food produced in those 7 years of abundance in Egypt and stored it in the city. In each city, he put the food grown in the fields surrounding it. Joseph stored up huge quantities of grain, like the sand of the sea. It was so much that he stopped keeping records because it was beyond measure. Before the years of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph by Asenath, daughter of Potiphar, priest of On. Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh and said,
"It is because God has given me yet all my trouble and all my troubles."
The second son he named Ephraim and said,
"It is because God has been fruitful in the land of my suffering."
The 7 years of abundance in Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began, just as Joseph had said. There was famine in all the other lands, but in the whole land of Egypt there was food. When all Egypt began to feel the famine, the people cried out to Pharaoh for food. Then Pharaoh told all the Egyptians,
"Go to Joseph and do what he tells you."
When the famine had spread over the whole country, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold grain to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe throughout Egypt, and all the world came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe everywhere.
Well, you can give them a round of applause, can't you? Thank you very much. Okay, so from why to worship. Now, we live in a world of instant knowledge at our fingertips, but I wonder, has anyone been asked a difficult question this week or recently? Maybe a question which you couldn't answer, or one that you found really difficult to answer. Maybe at work, maybe a child. Children are very good at asking difficult questions. Anyone got a difficult question you want to share that you've been asked recently? Don't worry if not. That might be your difficult question. Well, one of our children asked me a great question recently. The question was, why has God given us teeth which fall out while all our other bones grow as we get bigger? And I can answer that one. I thought it was a good question, but I can answer that one. Maybe you could. I think there are many difficult questions that we're asked that we can find answers to, but there are many that we can't. And many of those questions which we can't answer start with the same question. Same word, sorry, which is why. Why? It's a word which we can use on so many levels, but there are many why questions which we simply can't answer. Often these are the questions that can be really laden with pain, and those are the particular why questions which are our focus today. In the story we just heard, there are two massive whys. They're not explicit in the text, but they're definitely there, and our journey starts with them. For Joseph, there's a very personal why. Why am I here? Why am I still in jail? I've been here for years, probably by that point over 10 years, though I did nothing wrong. I'd hoped that the cupbearer, whose dream I interpreted, would have helped to get me out by now. But that was over 2 years ago, and nothing has happened. So why am I still here? Later, there's a much bigger why. Famine strikes the whole area for 7 years. And this isn't a normal natural disaster. The passage is really clear that God is causing this disaster. And it's there a few times. The matter has been firmly decided by God, and God will do it. The 7 years is repeated many times, which is the Bible's word for completeness. There will be complete blessing followed by complete famine, both God ordained. So why? Why would God do that? So two very big whys in the passage, a very big personal why and a very big national or whole regional why. And we all have our why questions too, which we can't answer. Maybe you find yourself asking that question as you listen to the news or you pray for situations of those you know. Why? I suspect for all of us, there are questions in our mind today which are those why questions. Now, sadly, I'm not going to answer your why questions today, and I'm also really cautious of today's passage giving some kind of false hope of a specific answer to come. Sometimes your why question might be answered with the benefit of time and hindsight, but sometimes it might not. But what our passage can remind us today is that God is sovereign and God has a plan. This is the overriding message of Joseph. God is sovereign and God has a plan. We've seen this over the last couple of weeks as we've reflected on staying faithful to God, kind of the things that we've been singing about this morning. Staying faithful to God in all circumstances and trusting God in all circumstances. We'll see the culmination of God's plan through Joseph over the course of the next couple of weeks. But today's story reveals, if you like, for the first time in the story of Joseph, what kind of a plan it is. And it's a plan of rescue. Of rescue. The jealousy of Joseph's brothers and the lust of Potiphar's wife together bring tough times for Joseph. God ordains a famine across the whole region to bring devastating times for many. Why? Well, it's because at the birth of his nation, at the start of God's relationship with his people, he is giving them a taste of who he is and his relationship with his people. What the nature of that relationship is really going to be all about. And it's a relationship of rescue. It's a relationship which builds our dependence on him as our rescuer. On a personal level, Joseph is crushed twice, but in God's timing, he is rescued. And more than that, he becomes Pharaoh's number two. On a national level, the nation of Egypt is rescued from starvation. And more than that, becomes a blessing to the nations around. The promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob starts to be fulfilled. God is sovereign and God has a plan, and it's a plan of rescue. Now, if you just think for a moment about what's to come in the story of God's people. Later, God's people will be slaves in Egypt, but he'll rescue them and he'll take them to the promised land. Later still, his people will be conquered and carried off to Babylon, but he'll rescue them and bring them back to Israel. God's plan is repeatedly through Scripture one of rescue. He rescues Lot from Sodom. He rescues Israel from the Philistines through David. He rescues Daniel from the lions. He rescues Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego from the fiery furnace. He rescues Jonah from the sea. He rescues his entire people from slaughter through Esther. He rescues Paul from jail in Philippi. He rescues, rescues, and rescues. And I'm sure there are many more examples in the Bible that you can think of. And what about the bigger picture? Ultimately, all of God's people across all ages, all of us, are slaves to sin. We're chronically inclined in our hearts away from God. The Bible says that because of that, all humanity is condemned to death. but he rescues us through the death of Jesus, and he brings us to his eternal home. It's fundamental to the nature of God and to his relationship with us that he is a God of rescue. Now, I think there might be a little irony here, because it would undoubtedly be possible to look at the passage that we're looking at today and to draw a very different message. You could very well read it and say this. You could say, well, bad times come to everyone, so store up what you can while you can. You could take the application, like every good Boy Scout, be prepared. And on one level, I think that's got to be right. Although the famine here is God-ordained, we also see a God-ordained solution to the bad times, which is wise and sensible planning in the good times. So there is an extent to which God wants us to be dependent on ourselves and to act wisely and sensibly to plan and prepare for the future. That might mean that for some, there is a message of wisdom here that is relevant for you. Not to overspend, not to build up too much debt, to try to live responsibly, to save for a rainy day. And I think maybe our nation, maybe our government, needs to hear that wisdom too. But alongside that, the Bible all needs to be read together as one. So that message has to be tempered with Jesus' caution not to overly worry and not to store up treasures on earth. There is a happy balance for each of us in being wisely prepared for the bad times when they come, but not building our identity or basing our security in our storehouses on earth, treasuring God above all else. Perhaps, too, the picture of famine that we read in the passage today could be extended to other areas of life, not just material things. Maybe you're someone who occasionally goes through periods of self-doubt or of doubting God. In which case, there may be a message here of wisdom to think about how in the good times you can store up encouragements or reminders for yourself for when the difficult times come. There's the great verse which comes just after all the miracles surrounding Jesus' birth, that Mary treasured or stored up these things in her heart, suggesting that somehow the blessings of those high days helps her through the low days later. Now, whether it's material things or things that are non-material but are still important to you, still relevant to you, what are the areas of our lives where we need the Spirit of God to bring us discernment and wisdom so that we might take the necessary action to be prepared? But while these lessons are absolutely valid, they're really not the main point. So the irony, I think, is that while this passage can helpfully instruct us to be prepared, which is a good principle, the passage really points to God as the God of our rescue and our total dependence on him. It's easy to think about this as a story about Joseph, but it isn't really about Joseph. It isn't about what Joseph is doing. It's about what God is doing. In God's great plans, he is revealing himself and what sort of a God he is going to be for his people. He is proving himself as sovereign and as rescuer. Now, that doesn't change our whys. It didn't change the whys for the people of God in the Bible either. But when they did become slaves in Egypt, they could remember how God rescued them from famine, and they could depend on their rescuing God again. When they became exiles in Babylon, they could remember how God had rescued them before and depend on him for their rescue again. When we think of our lives as hopeless failures by God's perfect standards, we can look to our rescuing God and depend on him for our rescue. So this is how the story of Joseph has encouraged the people of God for literally thousands of years. I remember, this is just a small anecdote, I remember one day coming to a birthday party in this building. When our son was outside, it wasn't his birthday party, And we were on the just on the other side of the road, just over here. He was probably about two or three at the time. Suddenly he saw the friend whose birthday party it was on this side of the road, let go of my hand and darted towards them across the road. A memory which I'm sure will stick in my memory, in my mind for many years. I was after him, quick as a flash, the sort of cars were coming along the road, and put myself between him and the car and pulled him, yanked him back onto the pavement. No harm was done at all. But when he saw the car, he realised what could have happened and what I had done. And I remember that for quite a few weeks after that, he definitely held my hand tighter. Now, I think that's a picture of how we are with God. When we know him as the one who rescues us, and we know our dependence on him, we hold his hand tighter. The story of Joseph fuels our trust in God. It fuels our worship of him. Over the last couple of weeks, we've considered Joseph's resolute faith in really tough circumstances. It's a resolve which says, I will trust in God. But today's passage gives us a different perspective. It focuses on God as the hero of the story, not on Joseph as the hero of the story. It encourages us to know the God who is sovereign over all things and who is our rescuer, and to say, in God I trust. Because of who you are, Lord, I will trust you. Because of who you are, Lord, I will worship you. So that's the journey from why to worship. Now, in a few moments, we're going to take communion together, when we'll remember God's greatest rescue of our deepest need. But first, just to lead us into some time of prayer and song, I wonder if I can just invite you to reflect for a moment on what this passage reminds you about the character of God and the nature of his relationship with you. If you just start with this phrase in your mind, I praise you, God, that you, dot, dot, dot. What comes next for you? Hopefully I've given you a few thoughts on that this morning. So I'm just going to give you a few moments now just to pray quietly on your own, just using that phrase to start you off. I praise you, God, that you. And then I'll wrap us up in a few moments in prayer. So just a few moments of quiet now, just to focus on God and to say, I praise you, God, that you. Father God, we praise you that you are the sovereign God. We praise you that you have authority over all things. We praise you that you know what tomorrow holds for each of us and every day. We praise you that you have a plan for your people. We praise you that you are with us in all circumstances, both the good times and the bad times. We praise you that you are our provider. We praise you that you are our rescuer. We praise you for meeting our deepest need, for coming as Jesus to die for us, to rescue us from death, and to bring us to your eternal home. You, Lord, we trust. You, Lord, we worship. Okay, it feels like in many ways we could stop there. But I thought I'd just give you a little postscript, if you like, to take into the week. Something just to reflect on over your coffee. So after Jesus' death and resurrection, Jesus sent his followers out into the world to use what God had given them to serve him. And we've just had communion to remember Jesus' death and resurrection, and in a few minutes we'll be going out. So I want to just us to have an opportunity to reflect on what God has given us to serve him. So if I bring it back to Joseph and our passage for today, Genesis 41, if you've still got it open. The big message there there is definitely about knowing our God who is sovereign over all and our rescuer, and responding in trust and worship. But the passage tells us that in Joseph is the Spirit of God. Even Pharaoh, the ultimate ruler of the great superpower of Egypt at the time, he recognizes it too. The Spirit of God is in Joseph. So here are just two questions. Ben's going to put them up. I just want to invite you just to reflect on these two questions for a moment. Maybe just discuss them with the person sitting next to you. What are Joseph's gifts? From Genesis 41, what are Joseph's gifts? And what is Joseph gifted for? In other words, how does Joseph use those gifts? You can either just remember back to the passage when it was read out earlier, or if you want to turn it up again, you can do. And just spend a couple of minutes. We've got a few minutes now. So just spend a couple of minutes together with the person sitting next to you and just discuss those two questions. What are Joseph's gifts? What has God given Joseph? And what is Joseph gifted for? How does Joseph put those gifts into practice, into use? Okay? So just 2 minutes to discuss that with the person sitting next to you. Okay, maybe draw your conversations to a close. Great to hear so much enthusiastic discussion. I wonder what you came up with. You can continue those conversations afterwards. Now, I don't know if you've ever had a prophetic dream. Prophetic dreams are clearly something, one aspect of Joseph's gifts. I don't know if you've ever had a prophetic dream or ever received an interpretation of someone else's prophetic dream. Just as an amusing story. Apparently, on the first time I met Anna, I hope she doesn't mind me sharing this, first time I met Anna, apparently that night she had a prophetic dream that she and I would one day be married. But wisely, she didn't tell me that until 5 years later after we were married. So having prophetic dreams and interpreting others' dreams are definitely part of God's gifts for Joseph. Though it's interesting that in the whole story, Joseph only has two prophetic dreams. They're both when he's 17, when he's still a teenager. And he interprets only three dreams. There's the two in prison, and then the big one today for Pharaoh. Yet in contrast, he displays his God-given wisdom and discernment constantly for almost 30 years. First serving Potiphar, then the prison warder, and finally for Pharaoh. Now, the important thing, I think, is this, that for each of the gifts that God gave Joseph, he used them. And as a result, God achieved his purposes through him. God's purpose was to bring Joseph to his position of authority, and he did that through the gift of interpreting a dream. But God's purpose was also to bring about the rescue of Egypt, and he did that through giving Joseph the required discernment and wisdom. God gave the gift, Joseph applied it, and God achieved his purposes. Now, we always have to be cautious about looking for role models in the Bible, from the human characters of the Bible. Many of the human characters in the Bible certainly are not role models, or even the ones that you think are role models then go and do something which certainly isn't something that we should follow. But with Joseph, we do see that he is faithful to God despite his circumstances. We've seen that over the last couple of weeks. And in today's passage, we still see how he turns Pharaoh's plea for an interpretation straight to God as the interpreter of dreams. It's a small detail, but he gives his children Hebrew names, despite Pharaoh by that point really encouraging Joseph to become as Egyptian as possible. I don't know if you noticed it as it was read out earlier, but Pharaoh gives Joseph a new hairstyle, new clothes, new jewelry, new form of transport, new name, and even a wife, all encouraging him to become Egyptian. And yet Joseph gives his children Hebrew names, names which have a significant meaning. Joseph holds on to God and knows his identity as one of God's chosen people, and God stays with him. God's spirit is in Joseph, and Joseph gets on and uses the gifts that God has given him to serve wherever he may be. Now, the Spirit of God is also in us as followers of God, as followers of Jesus. So this begs some questions for us. Now, these are the questions now that I want you to invite you to reflect on maybe over your coffee or lunch later. First, try to answer this for yourself. If you're a follower of Jesus, the Spirit of God is in you, so what are your gifts from him? I don't underestimate yourself here or underestimate God. And second, what are you gifted for? And again, don't underestimate your role in God's purposes. Now, many of us find that quite difficult. Maybe it's our English nature of self-deprecation or whatever it may be. But many of us find that quite difficult to identify God's gifts and our role in God's purposes. So then I want you to think about these questions, but to do so thinking of someone else, someone you know well, and to ask yourself the question, what are their gifts and what are they gifted for? And then just think about it. Go and tell them and encourage them in that afterwards. How can you encourage someone else in the giftings that they have and to put their gifts to great use? Now, we've just gone past the end of January, and I wonder how many of you are still enjoying your Christmas presents from just over a month ago. A present only really has value if you use it, and yet by the end of January, many of them are on the shelf, and they'll be given to a charity shop by the end of the year and probably passed on to someone else. A gift from God only has value when it is used, when it is treasured and used. So it's worth reflecting not just on what God has gifted us, but on whether those gifts are being exercised as they could be. Now, sometimes it might not seem like you're exercising your gifts within God's purposes. I'm sure that felt the case for Joseph when he was in prison. He was serving the prisoners. He was serving the prison warder. But he must have struggled to feel, how am I using the gifts that God has given me here within God's purposes? But he was. We saw that as the story continues. And he kept on using his gifts to serve. Now, we're not all Joseph, so we definitely won't have the same gifts as him either. But God is doing something miraculous by his Spirit in and through every single one of us. Now, if you're new here, this is an opportunity to just invite you to think about the things going on in this place. There are many ways in which, as an organizer, as a group of people, as a mission, that we're serving our local community. So you can come and talk to me about that afterwards. You can go and talk to Ryan. You see him sitting at the back there. If you want to know more about some of the things going on here, or Kathy over on the far side, someone, one of the staff members here, if you want to know more about what's going on. But this isn't just about our organized church stuff. This is really about our whole lives. It's our whole life gifting. It's thinking about what's the right job that fits with your gifts to serve the wider world. It's about exercising our gifts with our families, with our neighbours, with our community. So what are your gifts and what are you gifted for? I hope that we can be challenged from today's passage as a fellowship, as a mission, to think about how Joseph was completely on board with God throughout his changing circumstances. He never sat on the sidelines and said, I can't see how God's at work in this, I'm just going to sit it out and wait. But he got on exercising the gifts God had given him wherever he was to serve. Always within the purposes of God, even if he couldn't see it at the time. So I pray that we may seek the giver, that we discern the gifts, and that we would use them. And then whether it feels like it or not, we would be playing our part within God's purposes.